documenting the crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro-FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2, this is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks, your host here for the next 3 hours. Nice to have you with us as we once again document the crisis of our republic, the undermining of our national, state, and individual autonomy. Today's the 5th of November, 2016, and it's good to have you with us once again, ladies and gentlemen. Well, we're learning more and more now. We just have information just coming out now. From Zero Hedge, among other sources, the FBI apparently is probing the Clinton Foundation. There's more than just the email servers. They're finally investigating the foundation. And will anything come out of this federal investigation? Or will this be another fixed scenario? That's my question. The cynic in me says she's not going to prison. And if anybody thinks she is, they're crazy. And if anybody thinks anybody else in the Clinton Foundation or the Clinton apparatus, the Clinton crime family is what we really should be calling them, because that's what it is. It's a criminal outfit, a criminal enterprise, and these people are too big to jail. There is one caveat I have to say in this, though, and that is that Dominique Strauss-Kahn, I never expected him to be dragged off a plane in New York City. So if you tick off the wrong person, you might actually go to jail if you're that big. But I don't really think Hillary or Bill, either one of them, I see this all over the place. If any of these people are ever arrested, I will stand corrected. It won't be the first time I've been wrong about a prediction, which is why I generally don't make predictions. But ladies and gentlemen, it would actually restore a little faith in our country and in the whole process if something did happen with these people. But don't kid yourself. What we're seeing here right now going on, I believe, is the elites fighting for control. There's infighting going on. They're fighting each other. They're battling each other. In the past, this was a lot more concealed. Today, it's gotten so bad they can't even cover it up, or they don't even care anymore. They don't even care to cover it up. There's a certain segment of the population that's so dull and dumb and unconcerned about what's going on in our country that they're not even concerned. These elites are not even concerned. They're not worried about covering anything up anymore. Because the people that are awake are paying attention. They're going to know either way. The horse has left the barn. The train has left the station. Whatever analogy or vernacular that you want to use to describe this, the bottom line is the people that are awake and paying attention and care are going to know either way because of the internet. The people that don't care aren't going to care no matter what you do, and that's evident by the fact that you have anybody in this country voting for Hillary Clinton, knowing full well that she's a criminal. That's the thing that I can't get past. And does it matter who you vote for? Yeah, we can have that debate. You're never going to change anything by voting, that's for sure. If somebody once said, if you were able to change anything by voting, you wouldn't be allowed to do it. And I believe that wholeheartedly. But if we can be thankful for one thing, it's this whole process, this whole election, should be over in a few days. But I don't know what to think about a second investigation, ladies and gentlemen. I don't expect it to go anywhere. Tyler Durden at Zero Hedge, now that, thanks to the first Wall Street Journal and then Fox News, the public is aware that a probe into the Clinton Foundation is not only a hot topic for both the FBI and the Department of Justice, and has managed to split the law enforcement organizations along ideological party lines, but is also actively ongoing despite the Department of Justice's attempts to squash it. Now, I think we now know, ladies and gentlemen, we now know why Comey reopened the investigation. And we'll get to that in a second. I think James Corbett has it figured out here. And so I got some audio here that I'll play you here in a second. And the latest update, they say, from Fox's Brett Beyer, we learned that the Clinton Foundation investigation is now taking a, quote, very high priority, unquote, perhaps courtesy of new documents revealed by WikiLeaks, which expressed not only a collusive element between Tenio, the Clinton Foundation, and the charitable foundation's donors, which included the use of funds for personal gain, but also revealed deep reservations by people within the foundation about ongoing conflicts of interest. Yeah, it not only not just anybody concerned within the foundation. If you read some of the WikiLeaks emails, believe it or not, Chelsea Clinton was trying to root out corruption at the foundation. It kind of surprises me, because I had just assumed that Chelsea was just as corrupt as her parents. But apparently they haven't managed to corrupt her to that degree yet. Give it a few years. But at least at the time, she was trying to actually root out corruption. And that was drawing the ire of people like Doug Band. Ah, she's screwing everything up. So it's kind of interesting to see how your opinions of certain people change when you learn more about it. But they say Fox adds that even before the WikiLeaks dumps of alleged emails linked to the Clinton campaign, FBI agents had collected a great deal of evidence, and FBI agents have interviewed and re-interviewed multiple people regarding the case. Quote, there is an avalanche of new information coming in every day, one source told Fox News, adding some of the information is coming from the WikiLeaks documents and new emails. FBI agents are, quote, actively and aggressively pursuing the case and will be going back and interviewing the same people again, some for the third time, Bauer's sources said. Agents also are going through what Clinton and top aides have said in previous interviews, as well as the FBI 302 documents, which agents use to report interviews they conduct to make sure notes line up according to sources. As expected, the Clinton Foundation denied everything, and Foundation spokesman Craig Mnason told Fox News in a statement, quote, we're not aware of any investigation into the foundation by the Department of Justice, Federal Bureau of Investigation, or any United States Attorney's Office, and we have not received a subpoena from any of those agencies, unquote. It goes on from there, and I will leave that there in the interest of time. Now, there's some other things that came out just a few days ago. This one just 2 days ago from Liberty Blitzkrieg, Michael Krieger, or Krieger. While you were watching the World Series, some very big news broke. Here's a summary of what Now, I wasn't watching the World Series. I couldn't care less about sports. It's bad enough politics is like sports. With people rooting on their team mindlessly. But he lists some things that people need to be paying attention to. Number one, the Clinton Foundation investigation is far more expansive than anybody has reported so far, and has been going on for more than a year. Number two, the laptops of Clinton aides Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson have not been destroyed, and agents are currently combing through them. The investigation has interviewed several people twice, and plans to interview some more a third time, and we just shared that from Zero Hedge. Number three, agents have found emails believed to have originated on Hillary Clinton's secret server on Anthony Weiner's laptop. They say the emails are not duplicates and could potentially be classified in nature. Why did Anthony Weiner have any of this information, ladies and gentlemen? Or, as I was talking to John in Tennessee, I don't know, was it yesterday? Might have been a couple of days ago. Was this a shared computer? Was it Uma Abedin that put this stuff in a folder called life insurance on Anthony Weiner's computer? Were they sharing that computer? Did she have access to it? You know, they were married. So, I don't know. Something to think about. I remember seeing on this program, in fact, I wanted to go back through and find the actual archive. I made a reference to, if I was Uma, I would be very worried. And this was before any of this started breaking up, because I just know how the Clintons are. I know how they stab each other in the back. The other side eats their own, and we see example after example after example of it. Good example, perfect example right now is how they're attacking the FBI director. Not that I have any feeling for him or anything, because I think he's a colossal scumbag. The only reason he reopened the investigation is because he had a conflict of interest at the FBI. He wouldn't have opened that investigation unless he had to open the investigation. So now, after praising him, hey, he's so wonderful, oh, he's so great, oh, Comey, he's such an unbiased cop, all of a sudden, oh, that scumbag Comey's trying to fix the election. This is how they eat their own, ladies and gentlemen. They don't care. They will turn on each other, stab each other in the back, because they have no loyalty. Anyway, number four, sources within the FBI have told him that an indictment is likely in the case of pay-for-play at the Clinton Foundation, barring some obstruction in some way, and there's the problem, ladies and gentlemen, from the Justice Department. Barring some... Do you think for a second, as long as Loretta Lynch is there, that the Clintons are going anywhere? Don't kid yourself. Loretta Lynch has already fixed one investigation, already ordered the FBI agents to stand down. Do you really think that any of this is going to go anywhere with Loretta Lynch at the helm? Number five, FBI sources say with 90... Now, I'll tell you what will happen. More than likely, there will be arrests. It just won't be the Clintons. Somebody's probably will go to jail. There will be a grand jury. It just won't be the Clintons on trial. That's how they operate. They'll throw their people under the bus quicker than you can say throw under the bus. That's why, if I was Uma Abedin, I would be very worried right now. Number five, the FBI sources say with 99% accuracy that Hillary Clinton's server has been hacked by at least five foreign intelligence agencies and that information had been taken from it. So, state secrets. There's already too many state secrets in the first place. But do we want them in the hands of foreign powers? Foreign governments. Now, there's a lot of other weird stuff going on. And I'm not sure what to make of it, but I'll share it with you and let you decide yourself. Eric Prince, you know, Blackwater fame, a colossal dirtbag, in my opinion. Anybody that would run a company that would be having hired killers on their staff. I mean, the whole company is killers for hire. We don't have any principle. We're not even going to operate under the pretense that we're doing it to be patriotic or serve our country or blah, blah, blah. No, 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 no. Just give us a paycheck and we'll go kill whoever you want. Okay? It takes a real scumbag to operate a company like that. But that's Eric Prince. Now, with that as background, now he's coming out and saying that the NYPD is ready to make arrests in Anthony Weiner's case. This comes from Breitbart, so take it with a grain of salt. But Blackwater founder and former Navy SEAL Eric Prince told Breitbart News Daily on SiriusXM that according to one of his well-paid sources in the New York Police Department, the NYPD wanted to do a press conference announcing the warrants and the additional arrests they were making in the Anthony Weiner investigation, but received huge pushback from the Justice Department. Prince began saying he had no problem believing reports that the FBI was highly confident multiple foreign agencies hacked Hillary Clinton's private email server. Quote, I mean, it's not like the foreign intelligence agencies leave a thank you note after they've hacked and stolen your data, unquote, Prince said to SiriusXM's host Alex Marlowe. Prince claimed he had insider knowledge of the investigation that could help explain why FBI Director James Comey had to announce he was reopening the investigation into Clinton's email server last week. He says, because of Wienergate and the sexting scandal, the NYPD started investigating it. Through a subpoena, through a warrant, they searched his laptop and sure enough found those 650,000 emails. They found way more stuff than just more information pertaining to the inappropriate sexting the guy was doing. They found State Department emails. They found a lot of other really damning criminal information, including money laundering, including the fact that Hillary went to this sex island with convicted pedophile Jerry Epstein. Bill Clinton went there more. You know, none of that matters because they're not going to be prosecuted for that. And that's the dirty little secret among many of these rich elites, is they like little children. Anyway, so whatever that means, we also see from True Pundit, Comey mandates all FBI agents, and can we rely upon this True Pundit? I don't know anything about this website. They're claiming Comey mandates all FBI agents report to DC offices and prep for raids, possible arrests in Clinton probes. I will put that in the show notes, and you can judge for yourself whether or not you buy that. I don't doubt that there's going to be arrests. I don't doubt that somebody will probably go to jail. They'll find a paper pusher, an office worker, somebody to blame. It'll all be swept under the rug, and Bill and Hillary will skate. Will she win the election? Well, who knows? I certainly haven't seen a big change to the electoral map. I've seen there has been a change to it, but it hasn't been a big change. It's still very much, I mean, you know, Michigan now is in, is considered a toss-up state now. There's enough, you know, there's a chance Trump could win. There's a bigger chance Hillary could win, but it could go either way. But at this point in time, how much does any of it matter when our country is massively in debt, listeners? How much does it really matter? I mean, it matters for the guns, I suppose. If Trump doesn't appoint Supreme Court justices that are going to reinterpret or rewrite the Constitution from the bench, it would matter in that regard. But how much is it going to matter ultimately when our nation is controlled by the big banks? When our nation has a stranglehold on it from the Federal Reserve? Ultimately, this is the problem that we have. And will anybody ever do anything about that? I'll tell you what, anybody that wants to call in, I'm going to go ahead and open up the phone lines early today. I see we have a caller on the line already. 1-844-646-8376. That's 1-844-6-GOVERN. 1-844-646-8376. If you'd like to call in. There's just a lot of things going on here, and we'll cover them as we get time, but I want to hear from you as well. Hello, caller. Who do we have here? Oops, wrong button. Sorry.
This is Kent. Kent, Kent from West Virginia.
How you doing, Kent? Is it Kent or Ken?
Pretty good. Kent, K-E-N-T.
Okay. I just want to make sure I get that down.
I've got sort of a different twist on this. I think, you know, the FBI is nothing if not loyal. You know, these are men and women who, you know, loyalty is their creed. And, you know, the Obama administration supposedly has jailed more whistleblowers than all previous administrations. Of course, back in the Watergate, they had the Deep Throat, which was, you know, a lone whistleblower. I think all this is orchestrated. And we had the situation where Trump was claiming that, you know, the election's rigged. Now, all of a sudden, we have a situation where I'm of the opinion that they have secret polls that know that Trump is going to win the election, and that they're setting the stage for some sort of fight after the election. They've established this position where Comey has come out and made an announcement, and now there's a challenge that's been put forward by some lawyers that are working, you know, are aligned with the Clintons but are Bush loyalists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, putting on record a challenge that they have, they violated this Hatch Act, which keeps prevents the federal government, people in the government, from engaging in politics and interfering with the election.
Hmm.
So they have established the groundwork. If she loses, they have established the groundwork for I don't know what it would be. I can't envision what, but these people, you know, they have. I'm thinking they've figured all out, some kind of legal challenge to invalidate the election or have a re-election.
You know, that sounds very plausible to me. A repeat of the 2000 fiasco. Only something perhaps more prolonged. Yeah, I could totally see them pulling something like that. And you might be right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, of course, we knew that in 2000 they had something planned for the following year. And I have the opinion they have something planned for next year. And Trump's in the way. He's in the way big time. He is really he's in their way. And I think you know the FBI just doesn't do. I mean, these people are loyal. Generally speaking, if they're they're loyal, no matter what you think about them, and they tend to skew conservative, and they just don't do this. I just don't believe that the FBI is all of a sudden leaking like a sieve. I just absolutely don't believe that. I don't believe those people are loyal, and, they're under
pressure. But to whom are they loyal? To whom are they loyal?
Well, they're loyal to the organization, and, they have their beliefs. You know, their beliefs don't correspond with our beliefs. But so I just don't believe that I don't believe there's a revolution in the FBI.
I never bought that. No, and I think I never bought the fact that that Comey was a neutral cop. You know, he's an unbiased cop just trying to do the right thing. I mean, the whole thing is laughable to me.
Yeah, the groundwork is laid for a challenge. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's all in the law. There's a Hatch Act, you know.
Yep.
And there's, you know, there's two guys that were, one was for Daddy Bush and one was for W, and I saw him on television, and, you know, that we're going to, they filed complaints and, you know, put in motion all the paperwork so that if it goes, I'm thinking they know that the polls are going, they're against them, and they're, you know, they're going to challenge the election in some fashion. I don't know how it'll play out, but that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, it'll play out in the courts, and it'll probably, the courts will decide the election.
And that's probably.
Which means we may not know. We may not know by next week. Next week we might be talking about this again. Imagine that.
I'm afraid so. I just don't think they're going to let Trump. You know, it's not going to happen. You know.
If he really is who he purports himself to be, and see, the problem I have with all of this, and here I go back. I look at who's backing Trump, and it's people like Rudolph Giuliani, you know, who was a colossal scumbag himself. You know, and, I was laying, trying to sleep last night, get a nap before the show. And this whole thing is playing on my mind. And I'm thinking about Rudolph Giuliani backing Donald Trump. And I'm thinking, we're kind of judged by the company we keep. And that is not good company. The fact that a snake like Giuliani could support Donald Trump doesn't speak well for Donald Trump. And then, but then you got the, Newt Gingrich too. Gingrich isn't a good guy, but he's backing Trump also. So you've got the George Bush Republicans who are, I guess, all voting for Hillary Clinton, according to what I've been reading, which ought to tell you what much of your, two-party, one-party system is all about. But then you got, breakaways and people like Giuliani and Newt Gingrich, who are complete dishonorable guys, and they're backing Trump, and as well as certain people in the intelligence agencies who have come out and taken credit for certain things. And I'm getting ahead of myself, but I want to play some audio here in a moment from one of them to kind of debunk a little bit of what he's talking about. Because, I don't know, there's just, do you ever feel like you're living in a dream? I mean, I feel like I'm getting sore here from pinching myself so much, trying to wake myself up from this surreal non-reality that we're living in today. It's unbelievable. It's like a movie. It's like a 3D movie that we're all living in right now.
Yeah, this the orchestration of this and the bombardment is just overwhelming, and I can't get over. I still have to go back to you're saying about the Bushes backing the Clintons, and Bush stood up there. We just can't forget. Daddy Bush is a very, very important fellow. I mean, there's a building down in McLean, Virginia, hidden away down in there. It's got his name on it, and it begins CIA. It's got his name on it. He's a very important fellow, and Trump stood up there and insulted his son right on television. And, I'm sure Daddy Bush just, he doesn't like that, and he's got friends and, the whole
family. Did he get his little feelings hurt?
Well, he's at the top, And
yeah, that's right. Well, he thinks he is anyway. Hey, Kent, hold on just a second. I got to take this break. I'll hold you over, okay? Let you finish your thoughts on the other side. Folks, you're welcome to call in. The number is 1-844-646-8376. That's 1-844-6-GOVERN. And we'll be back in a moment. We're back. This is Governed America. I'm Darren Weeks as we continue on here on this 5th of November 2016, the final show before the so-called election. By the way, the website is governedamerica.com. That's governedamerica.com. Lots of information always updated there on the website at Governed America, especially on the right-hand side of the main page where we have a lot of different feeds that just constantly update. And I've added more as time progresses. As a matter of fact, I added Borderland Beat to the number of different things that we carry over there because I think that site is doing a very good job at covering the violence along the U.S.-Mexican border, which people need to be more aware of is going on. If we have time later on, I'll get to some of that here on the broadcast. But in the meantime, I got a couple of calls on the line here. And you're welcome to jump on board as well. We have a few open lines at 1-844-646-8376. That's 1-844-6-GOVERN. And Kent is in West Virginia. And Kent, did you have anything else? I wanted to give you a chance to finish your thoughts there.
Yeah, I just want to, I just think there's, the whole apparatus of the whole hidden apparatus in this country is in movement against Trump. And, when Jeb stood up there and said to him, you're not going to insult your way into the White House. Well, Jeb has, he's a very influential fellow. And when, they had the convention and all these Republicans, Romney and McCain, they all stayed away. But Daddy Bush showed up And he made some sort of gesture there, which, you know, that was a signal to put the team bushes in operation, I think, to get Hillary in there and make sure Trump doesn't get in there, just for the old family honor, I think. So that's why I look at it, you know.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to see how the whole thing plays out. I wish we had an honest process. But, of course, I don't think we've had an honest process in at least my whole lifetime. But I've never seen it this bad before. I think.
No, it's just totally awful.
This is what a dying republic looks like, by the way. I mean, you have a bunch of rich people fighting each other for control. That's exactly what it looks like to me. Hey, Kent, thank you for calling there, friend.
Okay.
I'll talk to you later. And let's go ahead and switch over here to the next caller. And hello, caller. Who do we have here?
Dan in Kentucky. Hi, Darren. Great job, as always.
Hey, Dan. Thanks for holding on.
And, yeah, and happy V for Vendetta Day.
Oh, yeah.
That Guy Fawkes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of church, I'm just talking to my cousins, and it's in a lot of the church newspapers or whatever. A lot of churches are having vigils on Monday night to pray for this country and pray for people.
Well, I think it's long overdue, don't you?
Oh, absolutely.
We need all the prayer we can get. Especially with... Hey, did you hear... Hey, Dan, did you hear about the latest WikiLeaks revelations? Apparently, Hillary... Go ahead. Well, I was going to say John Podesta is being invited to some kind of a satanic ceremony.
is that Jeff Epstein's island?
No,
went there several times.
No, I think it's something different. It's a spirit cooking. InfoWars did a write up on it, and you know you can say well. But it's all documented. I mean, they link to the original email and everything on WikiLeaks.
What I saw in the emails, the emails also involve Obama and both Bushes and both Clintons now. So it goes all the way back to Reagan, and he's dead, you know?
Yeah.
But of course, Bush was... H.W. was at the Kennedy assassination. We all know that. So, mm-hmm. And the Bushes and Clintons are friends. But I wanted to mention a couple things. First of all, in a very good book, I think I mentioned it before, The Controversy of Zion.
Mm-hmm.
It's by Douglas Reed. He's a South African. He was correspondent during World War II, and he was in Berlin in the 30s. And England, and you know, fought in World War One. He talks about the destructive agenda that is involved in Zionism and how they play both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And Adelson is a big backer of Trump, you know. And the people that are against Comey now are bringing up stuff how J. Edgar Hoover was blackmailed by Meyer Lansky, you know, back in the 50s and 60s. And Adelson is backing Trump and whatever, so there's an agenda on both of these sides. But you know, I had a Russian professor in college. He worked with the Pentagon and Oak Ridge, and he said the Russians in the 1950s invented computers that were ternary. Instead of binary 0 and 1, they used 0, 1, and 2, and they never crashed, Aaron.
Wow!
If you set up, you know, like a surveyor or a artillery sighter in the military, you always have to triangulate something, right, to get a sighting on something, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
So it's in physics that you have to have three things. You know, you can't, a tripod chair will stand up, you know, even if it's uneven on top. Or, you know, if you're surveying or you're sighting for artillery, you have to triangulate. So there's two things people should think about when they hear things. What's the third view they're not telling you about? Because there always is at least a third view, and that's the alternate media like you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, I think went in the 60s, and they can find it, the 45 goals of the communist revolution, and that was put in the congressional record. And every one of these things is being followed by Hillary, especially, you know, the 9 month abortions, the nuclear war, the getting rid of God in the schools.
Yeah, even down to things like, you know, art, promoting ugly art. You know, I mean, you look around and see some of this art that's being promoted and some of these artists that are in the music industry, for one thing. I mean, everything ugly is being lifted up and promoted.
You know, I just found out why that is last week. Ann Barnhart, who was a commodity broker, and she closed her business back when they had the MF Global thing, when Salente lost all his money. And she said, you can't run an honest commodities business now. She has the YouTube out. Look up Ann Barnhart, B-A-R-N-H-R-A.
Yeah, I'm familiar with her. I've seen her in the past. Some of her videos.
Yeah, she's very good. And it's on diabolical narcissism. It's 2 hours, 53 minutes. She explains that about the artist. Mm-hmm. She says there's alpha narcissists, and they're told by the Illuminati what to think and do. And then they have all these beta narcissists that follow and whatever. And she gave an example of Yves Saint Laurent and some of these fashion people. I don't know who they are. But anyway, she said there was a documentary on Yves Saint Laurent, who is gay. His business partner is the alpha diabolical narcissist, and he was making all the fashion decisions. And here's this Yves Saint Laurent guy sucking up to him and said, is this hem too high? Is it too low? Is the color right? Whoa, whatever. You know, trying to get approbation from a narcissistic approbation from his controller and handler and gay lover, you know? Hmm. I hate to use that word with love, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so all of these alpha narcissists are told by the Illuminati what to do, and the reason they have the ugly art is they don't have taste at all, because the only emotions they have are hate, fear, envy, and, you know, anger. So they can't have any love or pleasure, so it's impossible for them to have taste. So they ape what taste is, and then they gradually change it, and all their go-along people, like this Laurent guy, they tell people what fashion is, and they don't have any basis for it except they're following orders, and they don't even have any taste, so they don't know what taste is. So they're rigid, like dogmatic communists. So they're telling people, this is art, this is beautiful, this is whatever. In fact, it's ugly, and because they're diabolical, and this is a battle for souls, they have no reason. And could people go along with it? Because they don't think like that.
Well, I think there's a certain, especially the young people. Unfortunately, the young people, in many respects, lead society. The young people have, in fact, this is why I think Agenda 21 devotes a whole chapter to children and youth and sustainable development, is because they're trying to capitalize upon the energy of young people, and if they can get a generation of young people, they've got the next generation. But society, for some reason, the culture is shaped by the youth. And so these communist movements develop and capitalize upon the youth and try to get them won over, and anything new can be promoted as, oh, this is cool, you're enlightened if you embrace this, and so they go for it, and it doesn't matter if it's gray.
And they're planning to start U.S. history after the Civil War. You forget the Revolution and the Civil War and everything that came before. Forget the Anti-Masonic Party in 1828, which could have straightened us all out. We've got rid of almost all the Masons for a couple of years, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're very good at leading the youth and telling them what to do, and the youth are regimented and they don't even know. But people can look up the 45 goals of communism, I think. That really would open their eyes, don't you, Darren?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've covered it before on the show, and you know,
I know you have.
Thing most people are aware, but of course, for the new people, is what we try to cater the the broadcast to. And that's certainly, okay, if you go through those...
voting machines?
Yeah.
Okay, about the voting machines, people ought to go in groups when they vote and watch the machine. And if you see your vote getting switched, don't get out of line. Call the judge, make him come over. And Bev Harris did an expose showing how the gemstone can change votes by a fraction, like maybe 1/7 or 1/1000 or 1.5 per person.
Mm-hmm.
But those things can be changed. I think I read that Alex Jones had a thing with Bev Harris yesterday or Thursday about, you know, she showed how the machines can work and how the technology in there is to reverse that gemstone technology, because Soros has those machines in 16 of the swing states.
Yeah, there you go. So the fix could very well be in.
People need to watch that.
Yeah.
We still vote with paper ballots here, so thank God, you know.
Yeah. Well, while it lasts. But I think Vicky was on to something last week when she said that a lot of this election fraud, they will push for a national voter registry. And I heard another host, and I won't mention his name here, but makes me question his motives. He came out the other day and pushed for national standards. We don't want national standards for our voting polling places.
No.
This elections are not supposed to be federalized. And that is exactly what it would take.
No.
I mean, if the federal government started coming out with some kind of national standards for voting. See, there's the dialectic. There's the synthesis, I think, is where they want to take this thing. I think Vicky is right on the money on that.
Well, that's what the communists do. All they had national standards for their elections too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, she's absolutely right about that. But people watch the voting machines, but you know that thing about the agenda. All people really need to do is ask if X that's happening right now is to build the country up or tear the country down. And wherever the idea is coming from, and it's usually coming from a binary Hegelian standpoint, there's no third point of view, you know.
Yep.
So, you know, wherever that's coming from, people know they ought to be against it.
That's right. Well, listen, Dan, thank you very much for calling, and I appreciate your call.
God bless you, Darren.
God bless you, too, my friend. We'll talk later. All right.
Take good care now.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
There he is, Dan in Kentucky, ladies and gentlemen. Had another call on the line. They dropped. So if you want to call back, we'll take your call. 1-844-646-8376. Toll free, 1-844-6-GOVERN. Once again, 1-844-646-8376. A lot of things going on here. We see from Russia Today, Assange says Clinton and ISIS funded by same money. Trump won't be allowed to win. Now, before I get to that, I want to get into this. I'll tell you what. The caller's back. I'll go ahead and... Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's a different call. Okay, never mind. Getting a little confused here. We, just to give you an idea, just how... what a nation of wussies we've become, ladies and gentlemen. Now, of course, we have all these colleges now with their safe spaces and their... triggering, you know, there's trigger words now you got to avoid, and everything's got to have a disclaimer on it, you know. So now we've got this same kind of mentality at our polling places. You know, we've got to have people there to protect us. We got to have people to protect us. Election protection, ladies and gentlemen. How did we possibly survive without all of this going on?
Volunteer election monitors will be at area polling stations, and they're making sure that voters are not turned away by intimidation or misinformation. Fox News' Jeff Bernthal is live with what you can expect to see on Election Day. Jeff?
And these monitors are not taking sides. They're nonpartisan, and you will not see them inside the polling station, but they will be outside, and they'll be there to help voters, and they should be pretty easy to spot.
Some of them will have a green vest. Others will wear a black button. Election Day monitors from the nonpartisan group Election Protection will be wearing easy-to-identify markings and plan on being at polling places in several cities, including St. Louis.
This has been a particularly tense election cycle, filled with a lot of vitriol, a lot of talk of possible observers, possible intimidation at the polls. This is something we are concerned about and on the lookout for, and that's why we intend to have monitors at polling places to ensure that all voters are able to cast a ballot free of any undue barriers, free of any intimidation.
The group received the delivery of flyers Thursday. They list top 10 things Missouri voters should know. Those flyers will be given to voters on Election Day.
We are not there to advocate on behalf of any candidate, any political party, or any issue. Our sole purpose at Election Protection is to be there for the voter and help them navigate the voting process on Election Day.
If voters have problems, they can call a hotline for help.
We will have attorneys on call and poll monitors at the polls to answer voters' questions, to assist them in navigating the process, and help ensure that they can cast a ballot free of any undue barriers or intimidation.
They can't possibly cast a ballot. They can't cast a ballot, ladies and gentlemen, without somebody to hold their hand at the polls. This is what it's come to. We've gone from being the can-do nation to being a bunch of little crybabies who can't even cast a ballot without somebody being there to make sure they're not picked on. Can you believe this? Unbelievable what this nation has come to. In the meantime, we have, you know, Dan brought up the voting machines. You know, here we have more voting irregularities. St. Clair County, Illinois.
And early voting is in full swing in Illinois, and two voting machines have already been shut down in St. Clair County after reports of irregularities with the machines.
Fox 2's Andy Banker spoke with a man who explains his vote was repeatedly switched.
And I voted for my U.S. representative, Boast, and it changed my vote to Barasivic, the Democrat. And as I voted on, I went down to Paul Schimpf, who was a state senator candidate, and I changed my vote to Sheila Simon.
When he notified the staff and election judges, he says even they had trouble getting his votes corrected. Eventually, they were properly cast. The county clerk confirms about a dozen...
Okay, how do you know they were eventually properly cast, ladies and gentlemen? I mean, really, I mean, can you ever really be sure that they were properly cast?
Problems reported out of more than 11,000 ballots, leading to the shutdown of two of about 60 voting machines.
One machine locked up when it was continually tapped to try to change a vote, and we pulled that machine out of service. We had another machine that the gentleman just says, I don't care what you say, what you're telling me, this thing's wrong, it switched my ballot. We shut that machine down.
And I'm afraid the election's going to be rigged.
In spite of Donald Trump's rallying cry about a rigged election, no one involved suspects that's what's going on here.
No. Why? What reason would you ever have to suspect that?
State's attorney confirms about a half dozen complaints to the voter integrity hotline that have merited further investigation. But he says they are signs of the system working, not a system that is rigged.
Oh, of course.
That's why I think people should have confidence in this system, because we are not going to let anything slide.
And again, we take this very seriously. This is eating up the social media on the internet.
Oh, no, I like this much better than doing those punch things.
You do.
I love it much better.
I don't see anything that would amount to rigging. I see people interacting with a machine, just like sometimes, you know, on your iPhone, as you touch the screen and it freezes up a little bit.
I don't call it voter fraud. I just call it an irregularity.
Yes.
And hopefully it'll never happen again.
That's Andy Banker, Fox 2 News.
Yeah, that's a very diplomatic way to put it. Oh, I don't call it voter fraud, even though I can see with my own eyes that my vote is being changed. Ladies and gentlemen, this is... God, do we have a bunch of mentally ill people in this country? Can you believe this? And folks, here's the thing. If this is happening in St. Clair County, Illinois, it's happening all over the country. The election is being fixed. Oh, we're not going to call it voter fraud. No, it's just an irregularity. It's just something weird that happened. Oh, we don't want to go back to those punch ballots. We don't want to go back to paper ballots. Unbelievable. Folks, is this not the very definition of mental illness? When you can see something with your own eyes and you're not willing to see it. You see it, but you don't see it. You don't get it. And this has been the problem with our country, well, my whole life. And going back before I was here. But I've been watching this thing for many years now. And people can see this problem staring them right in the face, and they can't acknowledge it. Yes, if this isn't voter fraud, what do you think is voter fraud? You know, what would it take for these people to see? That's, but they're typical Americans. It can't happen here. Oh, the election can't be fixed. No, my vote's been changed. I seen my vote changed. But hey, it's not fraud. Oh, it's just a glitch. It's a computer glitch. Very much like your iPhone freezing up. It happens. Unbelievable. Anyway, as I said, Julian Assange was interviewed earlier by John Pilger, and Russia Today covered that, and he had some interesting things to say about the Clintons.
There's a early 2014 email from Hillary Clinton, so not so long after she left Secretary of State, to her campaign manager, John Podesta. That email, it states that ISIS, is funded by Saudi Arabia and Qatar. The governments of Saudi Arabia and Qatar. Now, I think this is the most significant email in the whole collection.
ISIL, or ISIS, is created largely with money from the very people who are giving money to the Clinton Foundation.
Yes.
That's extraordinary.
It's extraordinary. Well, it's not really that extraordinary at all if you've been following this for any length of time. It's part and parcel of everything that's happened over the course of the last, what, 3 or 4 years? We've seen going on? Yeah. State-funded terrorism, ladies and gentlemen, is being funded by our state. Now, there's a video that's been going around on Patriot Circles, and I'm almost up against the break here. So I may have to do this on the other side of the break. But a number of people have been circulating, and I've got this from several different places. Several different people forwarding it to me, as evidently I'm on their email list. But it's also being carried by Patriot websites, and I guess certain Patriot broadcasters are touting it as being a wonderful thing that Steve Pechenik, who is a former high-ranking government insider and intelligence operative, apparently he's come out now and claiming that he's engaging in a coup, a counter-coup, against the Clintons. And I'm debating whether I should even get into this before the break. I think I'll wait until after the break. Problem is, I would be careful what you believe about anybody who just happens to be a former member of the State Department. In fact, I wrote an article about this. It's up on the website at governamerica.com. Meet Steve Pechenik, the CFR spook who wants to save the Republic. I highly encourage you to go check that out. Because this guy, I don't know, he just kind of gives me the creeps. You know, I hope he's well-meaning, but I don't think he is. I really don't think so, listeners. Given the fact that his background, in fact, I'll share a little of his background with you on the other side of the break. Stay with us. Phone numbers, phone lines are open, 1-844-646-8376. That's 1-844-646-8376. My email address is radio@governamerica.com. And we'll be back in a moment. This is Govern America. Hour number two is straight ahead. Stay with us.
govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro-FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2. This is Govern America, hour number 2. I'm Darren Weeks, as it continues to be the 5th of November, 2016, and greetings to all the folks in the chat room at chat.governamerica.com. There's a few people in there. You can join them if you want. That's chat.governamerica.com. And greetings to all the people listening to us on UCY.TV, which is now carrying all 3 hours of the show. Thank you very much, Jules. And greetings to all the folks listening to us on American Voice Radio Network, on satellite, and also on our streams and their streams and the other streams that carry. We were streamed in a lot of places. So thank you for carrying the show. Thank you for doing what you do. And thanks to all the micro FM stations that carry us as well. Very important to reach people on the ground where they are in the cities, you know, as they're driving around doing their business. Might happen to flip through the FM dial, and there we are. So thanks very much for all the stuff that you do, all the outlets. We appreciate you. We appreciate your efforts to save our country, to educate the people, because without that, we don't have a prayer. You know, with that, it's an uphill fight, but certainly if people are unaware of what's going on, what's really going on, and it really isn't that hard, but you got to know how to listen to the news. You can find out a lot from the news media if you just listen between the lines. You know, sometimes they do tell you what's going on, but you got to know how to listen. Anyway, before the break, and you're welcome to call in, by the way, 1-844-646-8376. Toll-free, 1-844-6-GOVERN, 844-646-8376. I was sharing with you a little bit about this Steve Pechnik guy. He's come out with a video. In fact, he's come out with more than one video, but he's talking about there's been a coup. And the thing that, you know, I've been going back and forth with Vicki Davis on this by email, because she picked right up on this, on the fact that he said on November 1st, Bill and Hillary Clinton enacted a coup. Now, I don't know what he's referring to that. You know, we've been trying to figure out exactly what it is he's referring to, the November 1st Clinton coup. But then he said in answer to that, him and his people, his peers, or however he puts it, has enacted a counter coup. And so I want to share with you a little bit about from this video here in just a second. We got a call on the line first. I'll go ahead and take this caller. Hello, caller. Who do we have here?
Yeah, this is Sam calling. How are you, Darren?
Oh, I'm doing well. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, I wanted to comment on this Steve Pechnik, or however you pronounce his name, but yeah, Alex has him on a lot, and when I saw the article, too, I was very suspicious, just like suspicious of a lot of these people coming out of the woodwork, like Trump bringing on, you know, Giuliani as part of his, you know, as potentially part of his team, and looking to the same people. See, the problem is what I see is I see Trump looking to the same people that were part of the Bush administration.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's almost down to the point we're messed up no matter which way we go. We may be be slightly more messed up if we go the route of Hillary. But I think what we're going to get with Trump is, because he's surrounding himself with the same advisors, is a police state just like we would with Hillary.
Yeah, and the wars. I think the wars are going to go forward. We might do a little better on the gun issue. And we might, you know, I mean, there are some things. I mean, I can't sit here and say that there's no difference because of the rhetoric itself. If he does it, you know, just a small fraction of what he claims he's going to do, which maybe he will, maybe he won't. But I don't know that he would pursue certain draconian measures quite as diligently as she would. And so he's definitely the lesser of two evils candidate at this point in time. But is he a saint? Is he a guy that's, we can all feel good about? I highly doubt it. I really don't think so. But,
well, the one thing we're certain with this Steve Pietschnick, he used to work under Henry Kissinger, among others. In this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Well, I'll tell you what. Let me go ahead and play the audio with you on the line,
since
we're talking about it anyway. I did a little condensed version so that the listeners could get, you know, if you want to listen to the whole thing, you can go to the website. It's up there right now under newest site editions at governamerica.com. But This is kind of a little bit of what he put out.
On November 1, 2016, Hillary and Bill Clinton and their entourage of assistants effected a civilian coup. This coup was done silently and very effectively through two methods, corruption and co-optation. The Clintons have been involved in co-opting our White House, our judiciary, our CIA, our Federal Bureau of Investigation, our Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, and our Director of the FBI, James Comey, for some time now. What they've done is to make sure that they were part and parcel of a group of people who were interrelated through political cronyism. However, in order to stop this coup, we in the intelligence community and others involved have informally gotten together, and with their permission, I am beginning to announce that we've initiated a counter coup through Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. What has happened in effect when Comey had to open up the case of Hillary Clinton and discuss the emails that were involved with the Anthony Weiner case, it was not the case itself that was as important as the fact that this was the entree for many of us in the counter coup to say to the administration, we have your number. Not only do we have your number, we're going to stop you from making Hillary the president of the United States. And at the same time, we will convict and indict the President of the United States, Loretta Lynch, and many others who were involved in the cover-up of the massive corruption that occurred under the Clinton Foundation. Now, in both cases, their coup was silent, and our counter-coup was silent, and it was all transgressed or occurred on the Internet. And this is probably the first time in the history of any country where a coup was initiated on through the Internet and a counter-coup was initiated through the Internet. I am just a small part of something far bigger than myself. It was the brave men and women who were in the FBI, the CIA, the Director of Intelligence, the military intelligence, and men and women in 15 other intelligence organizations who were sick and tired of seeing this corruption in the White House, in the Justice Department, and in the intelligence system. And we decided that there was something we had to do in order to save the Republic. So we initiated a counter coup through Julian Assange, who's been very brave and really quite formidable in his ability to come forth and provide all the necessary emails that we gave to him in order to undermine Hillary and Bill Clinton. Again, America, we're going through a major, major transition and, quite frankly, a second American Revolution. We do not have guns. We do not have weapons. We do not intend to kill anybody. We do not intend to harm anybody. But we, the American public, and those of us who serve as veterans and in the intelligence service like myself, will stop the Clintons from assuming power that they don't deserve. At the same time, we will make certain that Obama leaves without any trail of a pardon or any other act of treason. In effect, we want a peaceful transition in this great American Republic.
Okay, there it is, in a nutshell. And as you pointed out, Sam, this guy is he's a member, or was at one time anyway, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He's a psychiatrist who worked for intelligence, which to me reminds me of MK Ultra. You know, MK Naomi type of programming. As you pointed out, he was Deputy Assistant Secretary of State under Henry Kissinger, who is a member of the Globalist Council on Foreign Relations and the Globalist Trilateral Commission, I believe. He was also under Cyrus Vance, who is was on the CFR board of directors, and James Baker, who is also a CFR member. And this guy wants to save the Republic. Now, as I said, he was a psychiatrist, and by the way, he's also a psychological warfare expert. A psychological warfare expert. I'm going to let people have that sink in their head. Because we have intelligence agents. We have intelligence. This guy who comes out of U.S. intelligence, the U.S. intelligence establishment, the globalist establishment. Now, I would love to believe he's sincere. But as I say in my article, had it not been for the tireless and often secretive work of Mr. Pechnik's close association to undermine and deconstruct it, the Republic wouldn't need saving today. And here's the problem. So, how do we reconcile this?
Yeah, well, see, this is the oldest trick in the book when you want to take down a country is you put out loyal opposition. And I mean, it's just like the deal with Gingrich, you know. I mean, with this deal that happened with Megyn Kelly. I mean, now while Megyn Kelly was a pain in the rear end on that broadcast, I have no great affection for Newt Gingrich either. I go back to his Council on Foreign Relations as well. We go back to 1994 with what turned out to be the Contract on America, in which when the freshmen got in there, they were very quickly schooled on the fact of how the game was played, and they were not going to really make any change at all. And it was Gingrich that was the head of that whole operation when that went down in 1994. So we have all these people, Darren, coming out of the woodwork that claim to be the antidote to what we're experiencing now. And, you know, it's hard to believe that these people have suddenly had a come-to-Jesus moment, you know.
Yeah, well, and that's the problem. We've got a former CFR member and a person very closely involved with the State Department, of all things. The State Department. And he is a patriot that wants to save our country? No. That just doesn't add up. It doesn't add up. But see, the problem is people... This goes back really to what I was saying before. We've talked a lot about hero worship. Why is it that the patriot movement, if I can call it that, is looking for leaders? Why can't we be our own leaders? Why can't we quit worrying about looking for heroes to save us? You know, I guess I'm floored. You know, and I got an email from one of our listeners who says, you know, I just don't understand why everybody's falling for this. He says, everywhere I turn, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but it's like it seems like people all over the place are falling for this guy.
Well, I will tell you this. Now, I did post the article over there on our website, but a lot of times the reason I post this stuff, Darren, is to have cannon fodder to comment on when I do my own broadcast.
Right.
And, in fact, one of the things that I probably need to put up there is the news articles here do not necessarily reflect the opinions of us, you know, here, you know, in my case, the Information Corner, you know, because a lot of times I'll post something up there that I don't agree with, but I'll come back on it and I'll use it as fodder on the show. So, I just want to make sure everybody understands that if you see some of these things, like, for example, if you frequent over where I post, it doesn't mean I agree with them. A lot of times what it is I'll put it up there, because when I see it, then I can come back through and use it as show notes to come back and comment on. And it's interesting that you brought this thing up, because I was going to go right down this road tomorrow evening when I did my own broadcast. Because the problem is, folks, there's not going to be anybody riding in on any white horse out of the blue that's going to save the whole country. It's going to have to be done county by county. It's going to have to be done city by city, state by state, so on and so forth. Now, you know, the one thing that I will say that certainly is the right direction, and our legislature here needs to be commended for it, Darren. In all this, you know, occasionally we do get a glimmer of good news for those who think that we're all just doom and gloom out here, and that is that here in the state of Missouri, while you got the government trying to come after our guns, at least the state of Missouri just recently passed a law that allows concealed carry without a permit. And, of course, naturally, the gun control people are going on like this is going to be the Wild West. And all I can say to you, Darren, I'm still here, and nobody's been firing guns in the street in my location.
You know, funny that you mentioned that. I was sometimes I go over to the Huffington Post just to have a good laugh. And
yeah,
they have, you know, I've noticed their front page looks an awful lot like the Drudge Report, by the way. So I look at the Huffington Post as being the liberals' Drudge Report. But now they have a scary story where a guy in a Trump shirt carried a gun outside of a Virginia polling place. Authorities say that's fine. Mm-hmm. And they show the guy there. And now they make it a point and say that he was outside of the, what is it, the 40-foot no canvassing zone. And he was being nice to people, quote unquote, being nice. But some woman says, "Oh, I felt intimidated," and I guess she reported it. And the authorities said, "Well, you know, he's legal to carry. You know, he's got an open carry. You know, and you know, he can do that. You know." And she's, "Well, so it's like, oh gosh, you know, somebody's actually following the law. What are we gonna do? You know, they're exercising their right within the law."
The brainwashing has worked very well.
Oh, guns are evil. All guns are evil. Don't you know guns are evil, Sam?
No, I'm telling you, we got all these sniveling little soccer moms floating around in the cities, particularly, you know, who just, you know, get their panties in a wad, and I'm thinking, you know, come on, you know, I'd rather be amongst a bunch of people that are armed in a place, you know, where
absolutely,
you know, say somebody came through the door and started shooting in a business. I mean, out here where we live, you know, this is farm country out here. People have guns out here. And, you know, if you just take the time to look, you'll find that all the places where the strictest gun laws are, Chicago, Detroit, various other places, D.C. itself, that's where the lion's share of the murders are.
Absolutely.
Los Angeles, we can keep going down the list, you know.
Yeah, and those places where open carry and concealed carry have been legalized, you know, anytime guns are prevalent amongst the general population, the violence goes down. Over and over again, it's been proven. But never let reality get in the way of a good propaganda campaign.
Got it. Well, that's all I had. I wanted to comment on that because you were going right that road, and I told Trisha, I said, I got to call in on this show because you and I are both on the same page on that one, as well as Newt Gingrich as well. And we do have the Megyn Kelly thing I'm going to run tomorrow night myself. But basically what you got here now, what I see is people now, Megyn Kelly kind of beat up on Newt Gingrich, and they kind of went at it towards
the
end.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Megyn Kelly. I think
but people are taking Newt's side, though. See, and I'm saying,
well, that's the dialectic. That's the dialectic, right there. The dialectic is designed to force you to take sides. You take sides, and that way you're within the realm of their manipulation.
You got it. That's exactly right. So anyway, that's all I had, Darren, and thanks a lot. I'll let you get on with that.
I appreciate it. Yeah, and by the way, folks, his website is The Information Corner, theinformationcorner.com. He does a show of his own on Sunday nights, and in fact, we carry it here on our Govern America radio stream every Sunday night at, let's see, I'm thinking it's 1900, which would be 6 o'clock Eastern, I believe. No, 7 Eastern, 6 Central. So if you want to catch it, we go 1900. I know most people don't do the military time thing, the 24-hour clock. But anyway, so that's The Information Corner every Sunday night. And I've got some good feedback from that show, by the way. I meant to tell you, Sam, that Steve O'Brien, who does his own show on RBN, we talked the other day on the phone, and he was saying, "Who's that guy you run on Sunday night?" He said, "Boy, I learned a lot from that show. He caught your last show, so he was very encouraged, and so I think you got a new listener out of the deal." So anyway, the informationcorner.com, the archive is there, and you can catch a show right here on Govern America Radio stream, and so there it is. Anyway, moving along here. Let's see. We were talking about Steve Piecznik. I wanted to come back to this FBI thing for just a minute. Because I told you at the beginning of the show, we were, I believe now, the reason why, you know, James Corbett did a very good job. There is a Wall Street Journal article that came out just 4 days before James Comey sent a letter, the letter to Congress, saying that he was going to do some more digging and reopen, essentially reopen the investigation. That is really essential to understand why Comey did this. So James Corbett noticed this, or somebody called it to his attention. Anyway, he did a good expose on this. I want to share this with you.
Many theories have so far been floated about why the FBI director issued the letter just days before a national selection. Some of them, including the idea that Comey is struggling against an internal insurrection of agents disgruntled by his earlier decision to not prosecute Clinton, seem to have a basis in reality. But what seemingly everyone has missed with regard to the letter is that it was issued just 4 days after another bombshell piece of information. On October 24th, just 4 days before Comey sent his letter to Congress, the Wall Street Journal reported that Clinton friend and Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe donated money to a senior FBI investigator's wife when she ran for office. Benign on the surface, the story involves a deeper connection to the Clinton email investigation itself. As the Journal revealed, the political organization of Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe, an influential Democrat with long-standing ties to Bill and Hillary Clinton, gave nearly $500,000 to the election campaign of the wife of an official at the Federal Bureau of Investigation, who later helped oversee the investigation into Mrs. Clinton's email use. This revelation, coupled with the fact that McAuliffe's donation evidently went unreported, exposed massive impropriety in the dealings of Clinton's political allies and the FBI's scuttled investigation of her emails. As Michelle Chosadovsky of the Center for Research on Globalization notes, however, these twin bombshells are notable not for what they reveal about the corruption of the Clinton camp or the FBI, but what they reveal about the behind-the-scenes warfare that seems to be taking place between the powerful media and financial interests that are puppeteering the presidential selection itself.
What is unfolding, in effect, is that a major media conglomerate has triggered a crisis within the FBI where the number two man is, in fact, being bribed, and at the same time, he's responsible for the investigation of the Clinton emails scandal. And the timing was very carefully planned from the 24th to the 28th. The director of the FBI, responding to internal pressures, but also to save his own face, his integrity, decided to release a second letter.
Now, one thing, reading from this Wall Street Journal report, and I'll put the link in the show notes for you to read the whole article, but it was easy to miss this article. Because right after it came out is when all of this, you know, 4 days to be exact, is when all of this new news cycle began with Comey reopening the investigation. So it's difficult. It's real easy to miss the triggering, what was really the triggering event. But the Wall Street Journal says the political organization of Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe, an influential Democrat with long-standing ties to Bill and Hillary Clinton, gave nearly $500,000 to the election campaign of the wife of an official at the Federal Bureau of Investigation, who later helped oversee the investigation into Mrs. Clinton's email use. So there you have the conflict of interest. Comey put the same person over Clinton's email so-called investigation. Now, they say the campaign finance records show Mr. McAuliffe's Political Action Committee donated $467,500 to the 2015 state Senate campaign of Dr. Jill McCabe, who is married to Andrew McCabe, now the deputy director, listeners, number two in command at the FBI. The Virginia Democratic Party, over which Mr. McAuliffe exerts considerable control, donated an additional $207,788 worth of support to Dr. McCabe's campaign in the form of mailers, according to the records. That adds up to slightly more than $675,000 to her candidacy from entities either directly under Mr. McAuliffe's control or strongly influenced by him. The figure represents more than a third of all the campaign funds Dr. McCabe raised in the effort. So, you talk about quid pro quos. So this got to be, this is a huge conflict of interest. And so anyway, then the question you have to ask is, why would the Wall Street Journal want to help Donald Trump? Well, Michelle addresses this issue.
The Wall Street Journal is owned by News Corp, which belongs to the Murdoch Family Trust, namely Rupert Murdoch.
Okay, I'll hold on a second. I'll tell you what, I'm going to take the bottom of the hour break. I'm up against the clock here. We'll go ahead and take the break, and then we'll come back and we'll finish this part of it up and move on to other things. This is Govern America, the website governamerica.com, the chat room chat.governamerica.com. My email address is radio@governamerica.com, and the phone number is 1-844-646-8376, 1-844-6-GOVERN. Once again, 1-844-646-8376. And we'll take the bottom of the hour break, and we'll be back in a moment. Stay with us. All right, we're back. This is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks. And we're moving along here at the beyond the halfway point of the program now. As before the break, we were talking about this situation at the FBI and the investigation that's going on there and why Comey reopened the investigation. And it seems apparent to me, I think James Corbett has this all figured out now, there was an apparent conflict of interest at the FBI with the number two in command. And this Governor McAuliffe, very close ties to Hillary Clinton, his political organization gave to the wife of this FBI agent, this second in command. And so you had what appears to be another example of a quid pro quo. And so after the Wall Street Journal called this to the people's attention, that seems, but the question is, why would the Wall Street Journal want to help Donald Trump? And so this goes back to what we were talking about in the first hour, about this war going on for control, the battling entities right there in the forefront, fighting it out for control of not only our nation, but really the world. Once again, Michelle Chadodowski, I'm sure I mispronounced his name, and I apologize for that. He writes over at globalresearch.ca, which is an excellent website, by the way. Lots of good information over there at Global Research. But anyway, he addresses this issue of why the Wall Street Journal would want to help Donald Trump.
The Wall Street Journal is owned by News Corp, which belongs to the Murdoch Family Trust, namely Rupert Murdoch. We know that there's a relationship between Rupert Murdoch and Donald Trump, and they've had meetings in the course of the last few months. What I think is important is that there are significant divisions within the media monopolies competing with one another. On the one hand, you have the Murdoch group, which is supporting Trump, and on the other hand, you have the Time Warner CNN group supporting Hillary. And those conflicts and divisions are characteristic of broader conflicts within the financial establishment. I think that the elites are by no means monolithic. They are very profound divisions, and no doubt they're also profound divisions within the financial establishment with regard to Hillary's candidacy, which could become totally dysfunctional. So that, in effect, I think these things are happening in a sense in a concurrent fashion. There are divisions within the armed forces. The Joint Chiefs of Staff are against Hillary. So that, again, what's occurring is really a conflict of interest within the upper echelons of the financial and corporate elites.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. He arrives at the same conclusion, that there's a lot of infighting going on, and it would make a lot of sense from just a common sense point of view that they've been able to get done a lot of the stuff that they've been able to get done by simply the fact that they're able to pay people to get it done. You know, anybody that's ever tried to organize anything with volunteers, you know how difficult it is to get people to cooperate. You've got personalities involved. You've got egos involved. You got people who want to be chiefs and not enough Indians. All of that. And you just got people that are just lack of motivated. Unless you have some way of motivating them, it's very difficult to get them to cooperate. And sometimes, often, the whole thing falls apart because personalities get in the way. So, why would we think that the other side would be any different? Especially given the fact that they don't even have any, they don't have any morality at all on their side. It's all about the lust for power, the lust for greed. This is the kind of stuff that they're motivated by. So it just makes sense that there's going to be huge infighting. Now, as we look at the situation from a Homeland Security standpoint, Joe Arpaio, the sheriff, is being fought with by George Soros. Soros is spending $2 million to unseat Arpaio. Political reports, George Soros has contributed $2 million to a group working to defeat Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio in Arizona, the latest target of Soros's big spending in local law enforcement campaigns over the past year. You talk about a guy who, in my opinion, should be locked up, if not more. And I'll leave it to you to think about what that more should be. But anybody who is a traitor to our country, the way this dirtbag is, organizing riots, engineering violence against certain people and individuals and groups, there's the criminal investigation that needs to take place. Unfortunately, with the crime syndicate that we have in Washington, D.C. right now, can we look forward to any of this taking place? I would love to see a Trump presidency that would actually investigate George Soros. Would we see such a thing? I highly doubt it. But this dirtbag needs to be brought to justice. The Soros-funded PAC, Political Action Committee, Maricopa Strong, will file campaign finance documents Friday showing Soros' multi-million-dollar investment against Arpaio, along with $500,000 from Texas energy billionaires Laura and John Arnold and $250,000 from Lorene Powell Jobs, widow of Apple co-founder Steve Jobs. The group had previously reported a $300,000 donation from Soros, one of the Democratic Party's biggest donors. Soros has spent millions in 2015 and 2016 funding campaigns to defeat local prosecutors around the country and elect new ones who back criminal justice reform measures. What criminal justice reform can we look forward to from a dirtbag like George Soros, ladies and gentlemen, when he's going after a sheriff who wants to stop illegal immigration? Unbelievable. We mentioned the spirit cooking thing. I don't think I'm going to dwell on that too much. The links to all of this stuff will be in the show notes. I'm trying to get through as much stuff as we can. in the interest of time. But we see from the Daily Mail, Hillary Clinton wanted to give secure State Department cell phone to Anthony Weiner's trusted assistant. So this is the woman many people want to put into the White House. And what a scumbag Anthony Weiner has turned out to be. Here we see from Russia Today. Clinton email server reportedly exposed to hackers of five spy agencies. I think we already covered that in the first hour, so I'll move along here. Also from Russia Today, Bill Clinton and Obama worked to influence EU's Greece austerity deal. Say President Barack Obama and Bill Clinton sought to influence Greece to accept the EU's harsh austerity terms in 2015, according to leaked emails from Hillary Clinton's campaign chair, John Podesta. WikiLeaks released the correspondence dated 10 July 2015, in which Podesta wrote to Bill Clinton's chief of staff, Tina Florney, asking if the former president could talk to Greece Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras. White House asked me, and this is a quote, White House asked me whether WJC, which would be William Jefferson Clinton, had enough of a relationship with Prime Minister Tsipras to call him and counsel him to make a deal. Unquote. Florney responded saying Clinton would call, but that his immediate question is, are we pushing Merkel too? At the time, Greece had rejected austerity measures imposed by Europe and the IMF following the global financial crisis. And I apply this, ladies and gentlemen, to the United States. Because regardless of who is the next president of the United States, nobody is going to stop the coming financial calamity. And that's the one thing that everybody needs to take with them. If you get nothing else from this program, get that. We're going into another huge depression. The fact that they've been able to milk this thing for as long as they have is astounding to me. These money magicians keep pumping more and more money into the markets, keep manipulating things, but eventually the whole house of cards is going to fall down. And so the best thing that you can hope to do is prepare yourself and your family to the best that you can. And I realize it's difficult because most of us don't have a lot of money. They like it that way. They've engineered it that way. With your economy, with the outsourcing of American jobs to foreign countries, which has all been deliberate. It's all been on purpose. It's all been by design. But you need to get ready to whatever degree you can, because this thing is coming. Moving along here. Speaking of the economy, we see from CNBC, U.S. non-farm payrolls total 161,000 in October versus 175,000 jobs expected. They say the U.S. economy added a less than expected 161,000 jobs in October. Now that sounds relatively good, listeners, and the media has been trying to boost this. Hey, look at that. Look how great the economy's doing. Look how wonderful everything is. But what kind of jobs are these 161,000 jobs? And why has the economy added so many jobs? What kind of jobs are these? As we look deeper into this, many of these jobs, listeners, are part-time jobs. And why is that? Stuart Varney of Fox Business comments about what these numbers mean. I'm going to play a little bit of audio from him.
The final jobs report before the election came out this morning. America's not on the road to prosperity. The economy is slowing, and these numbers show it. Only 161,000 jobs created last month. We dug a little deeper. Look what we found. Part-time jobs up 90,000. Full-time jobs down 103,000. You call that prosperity? And yet the mainstream media will carry the water for the administration like it always does. The Washington Post ran this headline when the news broke. 4 days before the election, U.S. labor market continues to strengthen. What? Where have they been? This is the issue America should be voting on, but the media ignores the issue of restoring middle-class prosperity. Is there anything more important than that? Well, yes, there is. Keeping your family safe, honest government, restoring the respect of the world for America. Of course, we want all of the above. But for many years, America has taken a financial beating. Middle America, backbone of the country, has been shrinking. We haven't seen that in generations, and it has eaten away at our civil society.
And in fact, we got violence in the streets to look forward to if this kind of thing continues, listeners. You haven't seen anything yet. You want to look at what the future of America is, take a look at Venezuela right now. I've said it before. Other people have said it as well. I'm not trying to be doom and gloom here. I know it sounds like it, but we got to face reality. There's no way this whole dog and pony show can continue forever. Here we see from Zero Hedge, multiple job holders hit 21st century high as full-time jobs tumble. While today's headline jobs print was somewhat disappointing, with the establishment survey missing the expected print of 173,000 rising by 161,000, it was offset by upward revisions to previous months. But while the quantitative headline aspect is often open to interpretation, if I can spit it out here, the qualitative component of the October jobs print was, just like in the case of September, all too clear. It was ugly again. Recall that in September, the household survey revealed that the number of part-time workers soared by 430,000 as full-time workers actually declined by 5,000. The trend continued in October, when another 103,000 full-time jobs were lost, which was offset by a 90,000 increase in part-time jobs. In other words, the transition, listeners, to a part-time worker society appears to have resumed after a hiatus. Now, we'll get back to the part-time thing in just a moment. Well, I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and go to it now. Tammy Bruce, she was on Fox Business also. She's a syndicated talk show host who's kind of a liberal. I think she has some conservative ideas. She's in favor of abortion. She's a lesbian. She's worked for a number of Democratic campaigns, but she's also supported some Republican campaigns as well. She's in favor of the Second Amendment, the death penalty, which tends to be kind of a conservative type of issue, I suppose. Anyway, she, I think, accurately nailed the reason for the sudden spike in part-time employees.
I also need some comment from Tammy on the jobs report. The statistic which I've been harping on all morning is this, and I think this reflects our culture. Okay, 9 million working-age men not working. That's a big deal. 90,000 more part-time jobs, 103,000 fewer full-time jobs. That's a cultural development. It's not just economics.
Well, it is the result of the ultimate Obama legacy, which is Obamacare, is the destruction of the middle class through the destruction
of small
business.
You put it all down to that?
It is when you've got rules with Obamacare that is going to harm a business less if you have people working fewer hours, you are telling America to become a part-time nation. So small businesses want to survive so they can have some employees, but if you have full-time employees, it's going to cost you so much money, you're either going to have to fire people or you can keep some people hired. This is, I think, a direct result of that. It is the destruction of the middle class that we've seen move, and it is a direct link to the rules of Obamacare.
And it's not only hours, to Tammy's point, it's also the number of employees.
Yes.
If you stay under 50, you don't have to meet certain requirements, and so therefore, it's another disincentive for businesses to expand.
Obamacare was the death knell to employment in the country. And the fact is, the Democrats didn't even think about it. The administration didn't even think about it. They just wanted to get his legacy in. We have that with Jonathan Gruber admitting, we had no idea what this was going to do to costs, but the Americans wanted to hear that, so we said it.
I think they did think about it. I think they knew exactly what they were doing. I think the plan is to destroy the economy. When you're a closet communist, ladies and gentlemen, your plan is to destroy. I think they knew exactly what they were doing. We got a little Congress full of communists. Closet communists. Right along with the closet communist who's not really so closeted in the White House. Now, CNS News, 94,609,000 not in the labor force. 94.6 million people not in the labor force. I remember the same number, listeners, are very close to it. Talking about this. Now, we're supposed to be a nation of roughly 300 million people. This is a third of the entire U.S. population. And we have many of these people in the U.S. population that are children. So they wouldn't be in the labor force anyway. So what's the percentage of working age people that are not in the labor force? It's overwhelming. CNS News says in its final report before next week's presidential election, the Bureau of Labor Statistics said on Friday that 94,609,000 Americans are not in the labor force, 425,000 more than last month's 94,184,000, and the second highest number on record. Gee, are things getting better? You can keep putting spins on the numbers. What is that really accomplishing other than deception? But the American people, I think, increasingly are seeing through the deception because they're living the deception. Back maybe 10 years ago, you could pull the wool over many of these people's eyes. I remember I wrote in my article, unemployment, now that's sustainable. It's up on newswithviews.com about NAFTA. And I took apart some of the statements from the people writing in Foreign Affairs at the Council on Foreign Relations, where they were talking about, this is the outsourcing boogeyman. That was the name of the article, outsourcing boogeyman. Where they talk about, it's just the unemployment is just, it's a result of something else. It's a brief downturn. Eventually it's going to come back and people are going to forget about it. Yeah, well, we're still waiting here. The American people are still waiting here. And you can draw smiley faces on an ugly economy all you want. The people see through it because they're living it. The American people don't need statisticians to find out how their economy is doing. They look at the price of gas. They look at the price of things at the store. They look at their bank accounts, if they have a bank account. They look at whether or not they have a check coming in that's not a government check. They look at all of these things because they have to look at their own reality. And increasingly, their reality is biting them in the hind end. It's very difficult to bury your head in the sand when you're being chewed up from behind. They say the labor force participation rate dropped a tenth of a point to 62.8%. In other words, 62.8% of the non-institutionalized civilian population over the age of 16 is either unemployed or are actively looking for work, while the other 37.2% is not working or even looking. Why would they not be looking? Because they've looked. And they've given up because they can't find anything. The number of people employed dropped 43,000, declining from 151,968,000 in September to 151,925,000 in October. And I hate to keep giving numbers, because I know when you do that, you lose people. Sorry, I'm trying to fix something with my microphone here. I guess I'll do it later. Moving along here, we see Steve Rattner. He's an American financier. He served as lead advisor to the Presidential Task Force on the Auto Industry in 2009 for the Obama administration. He was managing principal at the Quadrangle Group, a private equity firm that specialized in the media and communications industries. He was on Morning Joe Friday. I guess that would be yesterday. And he commented on the labor force participation rate.
Why, though, is Donald Trump still doing so well? Well, part of it is because we do have a lot of disaffected workers. So what this shows is the percent of people over 16 who are either working or looking for a job. And as you can see, it peaked at 67%. Really back around the year 2000. And then it went down, it went up a little bit, but it's now down to 62.9%, which is the lowest level since 1977. We have fewer men of working age in our labor force than France does. We have about the same percentage of...
Wait, can you stop there for a second?
We have a lower percentage of working age men in our labor force, either working or looking for a job, than France.
Holy cow.
We have approximately the same percentage of working age women in our labor force, or working, as Japan, which is not exactly thought of as a bastion.
Why are we doing so poorly?
There's a lot of reasons, but this has to do with the people, the manufacturing jobs that have been lost, the plants that have been closed, the people who've lost their job and simply dropped out. And as we talked about on the show last week, you've had mortality rates go up, you've had lifespans go down, you've had the drug overdose problem, the suicide problem. There is a big social problem.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. People are getting disillusioned. They're killing themselves. They're putting guns to their head. I mean, it's bad. It's bad. And if you're not dealing with it every day, if you're one of the few who do have a job, who don't have to worry about it, then it's easy for you to disconnect from the misery that really is out there in a big way. But, you know, hey, good news. Taco Bell is hiring. They're adding 100,000 U.S. jobs by 2022. So there's unemployment out there, folks. You can go make tacos for all the Mexicans coming in. Because, you know, they're just coming in to do the jobs that Americans won't do. Top of the hour. Hour number 3, straight ahead. Stay with us. This is Governed America. I'm Darren Weeks. And we'll be back.
Governed America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2. This is Govern America, hour number 3. It continues to be the 5th of October, 2016, as we get back in it. And by the way, you're welcome to call in if you want. 1-844-646-8376. That's 1-844-6-GOVERN. That's 844-646-8376. As we were talking about the economy and talking about the corruption in government everywhere we turn. Before the break, as I said, we were talking about Taco Bell hiring, talking about the dismal jobs market out there, and the fact that we have an acceleration, really, of people who are no longer in the labor force. One thing that's interesting to me is that Elon Musk has come out and made his views known about, you know, how, because we have a number of different things really pressuring the job market. Free trade globalization is probably one of the biggest, but there's also the issue of automation and computers. I know many people in my field, professional broadcasting, a lot of the things have been automated regarding that. And that's been a big problem with people in broadcasting. But Elon Musk has come out and he says, basically, hey, if robots take your job, that's okay. The government can pay your salary. Computers, intelligent machines, and robots seem like the workforce of the future, according to CNBC, writing here. And as more and more jobs are replaced by technology, people will have to work less. They will have less work to do, that is, and ultimately will be sustained by payments from the government, predicts Elon Musk, the iconic Silicon Valley futurist, who is the founder and CEO of SolarCity, Tesla, and SpaceX. According to Musk, there really won't be any other options. He says, quote, there is a pretty good chance we end up with a universal basic income or something like that due to automation, unquote. He says, yeah, he continues, I am not sure what else one would do. I think that is what would happen. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. There's your communism. Everybody gets a government paycheck. And that seems to be where we're headed. And keep in mind, that which the government funds, the government controls. It's very obvious. I'll tell you what. CNBC, also, there's a quarantine going on. Southeast Alberta ranches. And they say it could last for months. This is a little bit of a deviation from where we were. Roughly 30 ranches are being quarantined as officials investigate a case of bovine tuberculosis. I just thought I'd bring this to your attention. Anytime ranchers are being quarantined, it's a concern. They say the quarantine of some 30 Southeast Alberta ranches after a cow tested positive for bovine tuberculosis in the United States could last for several months, Canadian Food Inspection Agency, CFIA, officials said this week. The disease was detected in a cow after it was processed at a plant in the U.S. and traced back to Alberta. The quarantined ranches are located in the Buffalo, Attlee, and Suffield Block community pastures. So anyway, I just thought I'd point that out for those that, you know, and speaking of taxes, as we were talking about money and everything, and of course, we got more from Obamacare and where it's headed. There is the HIT tax, or a HIT tax, and Hoosier Ag Today reports that the federal government is about to raise your taxes and increase your cost of health insurance. Beginning in 2018, farmers and small businesses will have to start paying the health insurance tax, or HIT. The tax was created by the Affordable Care Act to help pay for the legislation. Congress voted last year to impose a one-year delay of the tax until 2018. AFBF tax specialist Pat Wolf says the tax would increase the cost of insurance for farmers and ranchers. She says farmers have two issues with health insurance. One is how much it costs, and the other is it available in rural areas. The HIT tax comes straight to how much does insurance cost. It raises the cost of health insurance, and it makes it harder for people who have to buy their own insurance to pay for insurance or to upgrade and get higher quality coverage. Another quality legacy maneuver, listeners, by the Obama administration. New York Times, you know, talking about, oh, by the way, there's one other thing regarding the economy. I wanted to come back to that real quickly. And the lack of jobs. There's one area that's doing just great economically. Guess what it is?
Defense companies are blowing past earnings expectations, bucking what's been an otherwise downbeat season for many of the big industrials. Northrop Grumman and General Dynamics, the latest to report better than expected results and issue upbeat guidance. Morgan Brennan explains why the defense sector is on the offensive.
Call it a great defense. Investors in the aerospace and defense index have seen double the returns of the broader stock market this year. And that could continue on the heels of solid earnings results from defense bellwether Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, and General Dynamics. On a conference call, Northrop Grumman CEO Wes Bush telling analysts strong demand for a wide variety of defense products is being driven by world events.
If you look broadly across the classes of the threat profile that range, you know, all the way from near-peer competitors to the world of cyber, it's clear to me that we're seeing a growing support, and I would say this is, across both sides of the aisle, a growing support for the need for the nation to really reinvest in its defense capabilities.
Northrop's earnings beat was helped by higher sales in the aerospace segment, which makes the center fuselage for the F-35 fighter jets. More buying in top-secret programs and autonomous systems also contributed to a higher 2016 profit forecast, the third such revision this year. The results came one day after Lockheed Martin, the world's largest defense contractor, trounced analyst estimates as well, sending that stock to multi-year highs. A third defense name, General Dynamics, also raised guidance and reported a profit beat. Overall, a new wave of government spending is propelling the entire defense industry, as American allies beef up security and the U.S. is poised to do the same, no matter which presidential candidate takes the Oval Office.
There you go. So, defense industry, the military-industrial complex, hey, everything is going great there. So I guess we can all go to work for Northrop Grumman. Anyway, back to Obamacare. I wanted to go to, we were talking about the this is very important for people to understand. A lot of people, in fact, the New York Times has an article, health law tax penalty, I'll take it, millions say. Where they say the architects of the Affordable Care Act thought they had a blunt instrument to force people, even young and healthy ones, to buy insurance through the law's online marketplace, a tax penalty for those who remain uninsured. It hasn't worked well, and that's at least partly to blame for soaring premiums next year on some of the health law's insurance exchanges. Well, it hasn't worked well. Folks, it was designed to fail. The Affordable Care Act was designed to fail, in my opinion. They wanted it to fail because the Affordable Care Act is a transitional piece of legislation. It was a transitional law. Now, I do think people need to understand, because I do think there's still some confusion out there. You will not be prosecuted if you don't have health insurance. Everyone needs to understand that. There is a misconception that the IRS can be sicked on you and that it'll be added to your income taxes. No. The law that was passed, and understand that there were two different versions. This is very important for people. The law that was passed, there was one that was passed from the House, one that originated in the House and one that originated in the Senate. It was the Senate version, as I recall, that passed, which, the way it was substantiated, that whole thing is a constitutional boondoggle in the first place, because any financial bill has got to originate, according to the Constitution, it has to originate in the House. So there's your ability to re-challenge in court the constitutionality of Obamacare. Nobody seems to be talking about that. It was the Supreme Court substantiated it only on the basis that it was a tax. Well, if it's a tax, then it has to originate in the House. The version that they passed originated in the Senate. So you've got that. But the Senate version that was passed specifically forbade the IRS from, being used to prosecute people for not having health insurance and not paying the tax. Basically, it is a toothless law. They cannot pursue you. Other than the only thing they can do as a remedy to try to get the money is if you got a refund coming from the IRS, then you just won't get your refund. They can take that. But they can't attach your wages. They can't attach your property. And that's very important for people to know. I've looked this up. I've read it myself. It's in the bill. Now, the version that they didn't pass did have all those provisions where the IRS could be used in a very much more draconian manner. That one they failed to pass, thank God. But this one, the one that they actually passed, specifically says they can't do that. So I want everyone out there to know that, as bad as it is, it could have actually been worse. And in fact, I think they would love for it to have been worse. But anyway, where I said Obamacare was designed to fail. Where are we going with this? Where are they going to take this whole thing? That's what we really need to examine. Obama made a speech in Miami, you know, because now he's on the defensive. All across the country, healthcare costs are skyrocketing. Obamacare in Arizona, I think we talked about this last week, 117% is going up. I mean, it's unbelievable. But, you know, he's getting up and he's talking about all the wonderful things Obamacare is doing.
It's true that a lot of the noise around the healthcare debate, ever since we tried to pass this law, has been nothing more than politics. But
okay, this is his talking point. He keeps chalking it up to politics. Oh, the people are just making political heyday with it. Okay? Now listen carefully to what he says.
Debate, ever since we tried to pass this law, has been nothing more than politics. But we've also always known, and I have always said, that for all the good that the Affordable Care Act is doing right now, for as big a step forward as it was, it's still just a first step.
Just a first step.
It's like building a starter home or buying a starter home. It's a lot better than not having a home, but you hope that over time you make some improvements.
You make some improvements, ladies and gentlemen. Did you catch that? He said it was just the first step. Where do you think they want to take this? So he goes on to make some kind of stupid analogy about Samsung and their exploding phones.
And think about it. When one of these companies comes out with a new smartphone, then it has a few bugs.
Uh-huh, a few bugs.
What do? They fix it. They upgrade it. Unless it catches fire, then they just... then they pull it off the market. But you don't go back to using a rotary phone. You don't say, well, we're repealing smartphones. We're just going to do the dial-up thing. It's not what you do. Well, the same basic principle applies here.
It's a great analogy. Because Obamacare is going up in flames. But it was designed to go up in flames. Now, listen to his solution. This is what I think I referenced this last week on the show, but we didn't actually get a chance to play the audio. Listen very carefully to what he says next.
So repeal is not the answer. Here's what we can do instead to actually make the Affordable Care Act work even better than it's working right now.
Because it ain't working at all.
I already mentioned one. Florida and every state should expand Medicaid. Cover more people.
More government.
It's easy to do, and it could be done right now. You'd cover 4 million more Americans, help drive down premiums for folks who buy insurance through the marketplace. And by the way, because the federal government pays for almost all of this expansion, you can't use as an excuse that, well, the state can't afford it. Because the federal government's paying it.
Hey, so let's just shift it all to the federal government.
Number one. Step number two. Since overall healthcare costs have turned out to be significantly lower than everyone expected since we passed Obamacare, since that's saved the federal government billions of dollars, we should use some of that money, some of those savings, to now provide more tax credits for more middle-income families, for more young adults, to help them buy insurance.
More
It'll
social.
Make their premiums more affordable, mm-hmm. And that's not just good for them. It's good for everybody.
More socialism, ladies and gentlemen. More government.
When more people are in the marketplace, everybody will benefit from lower premiums. Mm-hmm. Healthier people, younger people start joining the pool. Premiums generally go down. That'd be number two. The third thing we should do.
Now listen carefully to this. This is where he introduces the ultimate solution. Keep in mind, he said he wants to expand Medicare. And, you know, then we're going to take money that we save, you know, as if we save any money in government. But we're going to pay other people's costs down. Now, listen to this third thing that he has here, folks, because ultimately this is the icing on the cake. This is where they're going to take this thing.
Add what's called a public plan fallback to give folks more options in those places where there are just not enough insurers to compete. And that's especially important in some rural communities and rural states and counties. And, you know, if you live in L.A. right now, then it's working fine. There are a lot of insurers because it's a big market. There are a lot of providers. But if you're in some remote areas or you're in some small towns, it may be that the economics of it just don't work unless the government is providing an option.
There you go.
To make it affordable. And by the way, this is not complicated. Basically, you would just wait and see if the private insurers are competing for business, then you don't have to trigger a public option. But if no private insurers are providing affordable insurance in an area, then the government would step in with a quality plan that people can afford.
I can't believe anybody would listen to this guy. You know, he just has more and more ideas all the time, doesn't he? But are these ideas really his ideas, listeners? Or is he being fed this stuff? You know, this public option. Now he's introducing the public option, which is where they wanted to take it all along. Now, Florida candidate for U.S. Senate, Patrick Murphy, well, he's also pushing a public option.
I also believe that we should be looking at a public option, especially in rural areas, because one of the major premises of the Affordable Care Act was that there was competition, that there were more people fighting to insure you. That competition, the public option would be available for those to help lower those insurance rates.
Now, doesn't that sound exactly what Obama just said? So there's obviously coordination going on here. There's obviously talking points. And this is obviously the real agenda being pushed here. Okay, now, Nancy Pelosi, darling that she is, she was on Meet the Press with Chuck Todd it's probably a couple of weeks ago now. She let it slip exactly where she thinks this whole thing should go.
How damaging were Bill Clinton's comments about Obamacare when he said it was, the craziest thing, talking about folks getting squeezed in the middle, small business, folks basically that are not eligible for subsidies. And even when he clarified it, he basically circled what he believes, what he circled was essentially the issue that Republicans are bringing up on the campaign trail.
And not damaging at all.
You don't need damages at all.
The Affordable Care Act, 20 million more people have access to affordable quality health care. Not only that, tens of millions more are no longer subjected to pre-existing conditions, eliminating...
Do you acknowledge this problem with premiums, and do you acknowledge this problem in the middle here with small businesses
really
struggling?
Well, I want a single payer. I mean, I wanted a... I'd love a single payer, but we're not... I wanted a public option. Mm-hmm. Which would address that. But we've never done anything, whether it was Social Security, Medicare, and the rest, where we haven't said, how does this, let's see how it works, and let's improve it.
Did you hear her slip? She says, I wanted single payer. I want a public option. That tells you right there where they're planning on going with this thing, ladies and gentlemen. All right, we got a caller on the line. Let's go ahead and take the call. And folks, you're welcome to call in if you want. 1-844-646-8376. That's 1-844-6-GOVERN. Hello, caller. Who do we have?
Hey, Chris from Canada.
Hi, Chris. How you doing?
Good. You were talking earlier about the. You're still continuing with it, but you were talking about guaranteed income. And, like, as far as health care is concerned, we already got that for free here in Canada. So we're okay with it, apparently.
How is that working for you guys?
Funded. Well, not really well. It's
Because what I heard...
Apparently you still go to the hospital. I haven't been to one in 15 years. Because I know better. Unless I got a broken limb.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's getting really, it's going south.
Well, from what I understand,
it's going down the toilet.
During the Obamacare debate, it was brought up that a lot of the people from Canada were coming down to the United States to have major surgeries.
That's correct.
So, this is an issue. If
do it too, right?
What's that?
I said they have to have the money to do it too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so.
Yeah, but I mean, if you want to save a life and you can't get the proper care here in Canada, then you go down and get a good doctor in the States, and you pay your money.
Yeah. Yeah, it's you know.
But I mean, we all still pay for this. We still all pay for this, obviously, through our taxes for the privilege of having free health care.
Yeah, exactly.
And, yeah, we're not getting it. We're not getting what we need to survive. We're getting what they give us.
Well, and the problem, of course, is fairly obvious for anybody with an ounce of common sense. Unfortunately, most people don't have common sense anymore. But when that which the government funds, the government controls, and government controlled health care is a recipe to control every aspect of your life. And that's really what they want to do, because if they can dictate who gets coverage and who doesn't get coverage, or who pays what you pay for coverage, you know, basically it's communism. I mean, there's just no other word for it. And I envision, you know, behavioral controls being put on people in the future. They're going to be talking about what you can and can't eat. If you eat the wrong foods.
Already doing it here.
Well, there you go. There you go.
Tax on sodas, putting tax on you name it, food, and then they're banning certain, I think it's about 30,000 now plants that they banned that you can't use.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 15,000 here in Canada because they're not pharmaceutical grade. The sick industry is it's a good business to get into.
Yeah, well, that's
highly recommended for somebody that wants to get rich and doesn't care.
Well, there you go. If you can get your way through the universities, if you can, pile on that debt and get it insurmountable, you might be able to have a job out the other side if you go into the sickness industrial complex. Gosh, I wish we could be. Don't you wish we could be more positive about the general direction of things, Chris?
Well, I'm positive because we have hosts like you.
Well, that's very nice of you to say.
And that's what keeps me positive. I'll be honest with you. I think I would have thrown in the towel years ago if it hadn't been for listening to guys like you that through your own, just your own good conscience, want to get true information out to people. And I really do feel that. I mean, in my heart, that's very important, and that's what keeps me positive. Because if I was just to listen to television and mainstream, yeah, I think I'd probably just throw in the towel and say, just take me when you can.
Well,
I wish
we could reach more people. You know, I'm positive when I see more and more people. You know, I remember I kind of gauged some of the comments sections of some of these mainstream publications, because, you know, before, if anybody had said anything conspiratorial on one of these mainstream sites, they would have been attacked as some kind of tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorist. Now I see more people posting comments like what we would say in the Patriot Effort than I do, you know, seeing people that, you know, are detractors from it. So there's definitely something has shifted. Hey, do you have anything else, or you want to hold over the break, or?
Yeah, if I could.
Okay.
Yeah, I just want to talk about the guaranteed income.
Okay, hang on just a second. We'll be back in a moment, folks. Bottom of the hour break, final break of the show. And we'll be in the home stretch in the final. And you're welcome to call in if you want, 1-844-646-8376. 1-844-646-8376. This is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks. We'll be back. All right, we're in the home stretch of the broadcast right now. By the way, the website is governamerica.com. Keep your eye on the website throughout the week as we have constantly updated information up there. And Chris in Canada is on the line right now, and he wanted to talk about guaranteed income because we covered that article, the information about Elon Musk and his promotion of that idea. Go ahead, Chris, with your thoughts. Are you there? Chris? Okay. I don't know. My screen says he's still there. Oh, there you are. You were hiding on me.
Sorry. My mute button.
The old mute button. Gotcha again. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, Ron Stevens over at UCY.TV, Rock the Boat, touches on the subject a bit.
Okay.
On his shows. We are starting this experiment in Ontario, I believe, what's coming up soon. They're going to use two cities to see how well it works.
Mm.
And, well, we know where it's going to go from there.
Yeah.
And they're looking at like $800 a month that you get, whether you're rich, poor, in between, government money. And I've seen a lot of what's going on, even besides talking about just the guaranteed income. Obviously, the government pays for it. We're the government.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen the bureaucracy has been bloated to the point now where I don't even understand how I am able to afford to pay for it. And I can just imagine if they're going to go with two test cities, what's going to happen when they go full-blown all of Ontario and then full-blown all across the country?
Well, and what's going to happen?
That are actually out there producing income are going to be so broke.
Well, and the problem you're going to have here, Chris, the problem you're going to have is a lack of motivation by certain individuals. It's the same problem with communism. It doesn't work because if people can get...
Where does the money come from?
Well, there you go. I guess they'll just print it out of thin air like they do the rest of the money. But the problem is productivity will fall.
People that are motivated and that are trying to do their job that are paying for this. Because if you're a government official, which I think 60% of Ontario is right now, I mean, the other 40% are paying for that. What happens when you get rid of the other 40%?
Yeah.
Is that how it is? Is it a pipe dream that we just keep creating the money out of thin air and everybody's just happy and we all just get along?
Yeah, well, we're going to find out, aren't we? We're going to find out just how good their utopian society is. You know, and what the sad thing is that more people don't see this.
This story was brought up. Sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. I think there's a delay on your line there. What I was going to say is it's amazing to me that more people don't see through this. But the problem is, you know, the young people who you know, were all in with Bernie Sanders and free college, you know, and free health care and all this, except that they're not signing up for Obamacare, I notice, which is a big problem. You know, they're all in favor of socialism if it works for them, but if it works against them, they're not. Imagine that. But there's a lot of people that will go for it. Hey, I can have security, a government check every month coming in. That way I don't have to worry about working. That way I can go and pursue whatever I want to pursue. So it'll be interesting to see how the experiment up north there works. Because I got a feeling it ain't going to work at all.
It's coming. I mean, it's already in the plans. I've spoken with a couple of people that don't believe me, but it's already been reported. It's there. It's obvious. It's happening. And we're the experiment at this point. Maybe I'll be one of the lucky ones, and they'll bring it to my town, and I'll get that guaranteed income. Then maybe I won't complain so much.
Yeah. Well.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
I mean, if you're the person and you're saying, well, geez, man, times are tough right now, and I'm getting an extra $800 a month, I'm not gonna push any buttons here. I think I'll just ride along.
Yeah.
Go along to get along.
Exactly.
I need it.
Well, there you go.
And then they expand it.
They can control you by the health care. They can control you by cutting off your funding. And, you know, then the coup d'etat will be complete. You know, the Reds will have control of everything.
Well, and what you got to do, too, though, is when you accept this benefit, you've got to give them your whole life history. You've got to let them get into your bank account,
sure.
Get into your home, get into everything.
Why not?
You know, but...
Why not, slaves?
Well, for $800, eh?
Mm-hmm. Hey, you know, people are paying money at the airport. Were you listening last week? People are paying money at the airport to give a private company their biometric information so that they can maintain some dignity in their travel efforts. So if they will go for a scam like that, then they will go for anything, my friend.
Yeah.
Sorry, I hate to be a downer. Yeah. Just the
well,
way it
I don't
is.
Want to keep you. You got other callers, and but yeah, no. I just thought I'd touch on that with you. I wish we had more time. Maybe we'll get you on Ron's show.
All right,
we're trying.
Yeah,
anyways,
we'll dig up some time.
You're my friend. You're doing a great job.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Chris.
I'll keep listening. Okay.
All right. God bless you, sir. All right. Moving along here. We talked about last week the free trade agreement between the European Union and Canada. Apparently now that has been signed. Last week, the Canadian negotiator had walked out of the agreement. Now we find from Reuters, the European Union and Canada signed a free trade agreement on Sunday. So that was right after we did the show last week. That aims to generate jobs and growth, though it must still clear some 40 national and regional parliaments in Europe in the coming years to fully enter into force. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau signed the treaty along with the heads of the European Union institutions, a step that should enable a provisional implementation of the pact early in 2017 with the removal of most import duties. The name of the agreement is the Comprehensive Economic and Trade Agreement, CETA. Its passage, they say, has not been smooth, and they go on to talk about how, the problems that they've had. Anyway, the link to this will be in the show notes for those that are interested, which should be anybody in Canada. But these kinds of agreements, it's called integration, ladies and gentlemen. It's called a new world order. And integration's worked really great in Europe, hasn't it? Speaking of such, we have the Brexit situation. USA Today: court rules British lawmakers must vote on Brexit. Now, we talked about last week. Actually, we've talked about on this show in previous broadcasts about how the people were... It was all put up for a referendum whether or not they were going to leave, and I'm talking about Britain, the European Union, whether they were going to leave or not. People voted, to my astonishment, the thing went through, which I thought for sure they'd rigged the vote. Maybe they intended to and screwed up. The more I think about it, the more I think that there might have been some reason why it passed. Certainly, over there is a European Union army that the EU wants to build. If you look at the Lisbon Treaty, which is the foundational document, basically it's the constitution of the European Union, it forbids the European Union for having an EU army without the European Council has got to give unanimous consent for something like that. And the European Council is comprised of the heads of state of all the 27 member nations. So they cannot build a European Union army without the unanimous consent of the European Council. And Britain is very much against them having a European Union army. For one thing, it would be a competitor, a potential competitor with NATO. And so one of the themes of this show today has been all of the jockeying for control, the shifting, the competing interests involved, and here we have it. We see it again in this Brexit situation. Now, USA Today reports the British government can't trigger the process of leaving the European Union without approval from Parliament. The High Court ruled Thursday, dealing a blow to Prime Minister Theresa May and complicating the United Kingdom's exit negotiations. Well, gee, isn't that interesting? So we have the High Court over there after some lawsuits have been filed. And they say, nope, sorry, you got to have Parliament to do it. It doesn't matter that the people voted. It doesn't matter. You're staying in unless Parliament says you're leaving. They say the government said it was disappointed with the ruling and will appeal to the Supreme Court. A further hearing on the ruling is expected next month. So this will be something that we need to watch. Anyway, the BBC did a report on this, and I want to share this with you.
Let's get some more reaction now on our main news today, that the High Court has ruled that the government needs Parliament's approval to trigger the process of the UK leaving the European Union.
Well, let's hear first in this half hour from the Secretary of State for Exiting the EU, David Davis. He has just given his reaction in the last few minutes to this High Court ruling. He's been talking to our political correspondent, Eleanor Garnier. Let's hear his reaction.
The people have spoken in this. We've given the biggest mandate in history. The result of the referendum must be respected. Parliament voted by 6-1 to give the decision to the people. No ifs or buts. And that's why we are appealing this to get on with delivering the best deal for Britain. That's the best deal for growth, the best deal for investment, the best deal for jobs. The people want us to get on with it, and that's what we intend to do.
Are you clear at what judgment the judges gave today? Do you think approval needs to be from the Commons or the Lords as well? Does it need to take the format of a new piece of legislation? Can it just be a resolution according to what the judges have said today?
Well, the judges have laid out what we can't do, not exactly what we can do, but we're presuming it requires an Act of Parliament, therefore both Commons and Lords.
And you're obviously pushing back against that, but if you can't and the Supreme Court agrees with what the judge said today, what are you going to do?
Well, the first thing to say is that this was a decision of the British people. That decision was taken after a 6-1 vote in the Commons to give the decision to the British people. So that's why we're appealing it. We're appealing it intending to win that appeal so that we can deliver the best deal for Britain. Best in jobs, best in investment, best in growth. That's what the government's about. Delivering the mandate the people laid down in the best way, in the best national interest.
And that might be what the government believes, but judges in the High Court have said Parliament should be sovereign.
Well, Parliament is sovereign, has been sovereign, but of course the people are sovereign. The people are the ones who Parliament represent. 17.4 million of them, the biggest mandate in history, voted for us to leave the European Union. We're going to deliver on that mandate in the best way possible for the British national interest. Best in jobs, best in investment, best in growth. And we're going to do that. The people want us to get on with it. That's what we're going to do.
There you go. Now, there's another article from the Washington Times that talks about how a European Union army would not be in the best interest of the United States. And I'll put that in the show notes. I won't cover that in the interest of time. Moving along here, since we're running out of time, we see from thecollegefix.com, there's a Rutgers student who was fired from the campus newspaper for writing the term illegal alien in a column that he wrote. So you've got more of the political correctness going on in various places. Also, if you look at, staying on Europe for just a moment, the migrant situation over there has become very dire in France now. They're trying to force the migrants out. They're striking camps, tent cities. The number of these people who have flooded across the borders as refugees, their tents are being taken down by the French authorities, and the French government is trying to force the United Kingdom to take more of these people in. I'll tell you what, I got a report from France 24, because they did a pretty good job reporting on the refugee crisis. They're attempting to, as I said, get the United Kingdom to take more of these people. And if Hillary Clinton, I don't know what Donald Trump will do, but if Hillary Clinton gets in there, ladies and gentlemen, you can look forward to more of these people flooding over here, because she's already said that's what they intend to do.
Another day of hope for a handful of these refugee children. They could be the few who leave the jungle and try their luck across the channel, as more unaccompanied migrant children make their way to Britain to join their families. But the UK government has received accusations from religious leaders and charities of dragging its heels on helping to move refugee children out of the camp. And France has added to the wave of criticism. In a letter to The Guardian, the French Interior Minister Bernard Cazeneuve says,
"The UK government now needs to intensify this effort so that every unaccompanied minor can benefit from fair, lasting protection."
He's urging the two countries to work together to fulfil its moral duty. On the 10th of October, the French Interior Minister and his British counterpart Amber Rudd agreed to speed up the refugee application process. So far, only 80 children this year have been accepted for asylum in the UK from France. But the charity, the Red Cross, estimates 1,000 unaccompanied children are living in the jungle. 178 of those have ties to Britain.
We pay tribute to the Home Office for what they've done, but this needs to be replicated tenfold over the next week for us to meet our obligations.
France is expected to dismantle the jungle within the coming days, and it's feared many migrant children will leave without a trace when that happens.
Now, SPISA, the news service SPISA, talks about the Swedes, what's been going on over in Sweden. The Swedes are about to have enough of their failed juridical system, their cowardly judges, and a law which has revealed incredibly stupid and full of loopholes the technicalities that let criminals go unpunished. Several people in their justice system have been subjected to serious threats in the aftermath of the release of the rapists, an alleged gang rape of a woman bounded to a wheelchair, which has created fury in Gotland, according to GP. After a 30-year-old wheelchair-bound woman was raped by several immigrant men, the anger among the public on the island has escalated, they report. Now police send reinforcements, a special unit to calm the situation. So things are not going very rosy over there. In the meantime, we see from Germany. Germany, you know, the Germans are leaving their country in droves. The Gatestone Institute, which was carried by Zero Hedge, more than 1.5 million Germans, many of them highly educated, left Germany in the past decade. Germany is facing a spike in migrant crime, including an epidemic of rapes and sexual assaults. Mass migration is also accelerating the Islamization of Germany. Many Germans appear to be losing hope about the future direction of their country. Now, folks, everything we're saying about Germany, everything we're saying about the Swedes, apply it to the West, because it's coming. The more of these refugees are coming in, it's going to tilt the country in that direction. You're dealing with a cultural clash. You're dealing with a religious clash. You're dealing with a clash which could ultimately lead to a civil war, I'm afraid. And the elites will be sitting back behind the scenes watching it all pan out and laughing as people kill each other. Quote, we refugees do not... Okay, now this is a message that was actually posted by an 18-year-old Syrian migrant. He says, "We refugees do not want to live in the same country with you. You can, and I think you should, leave Germany. And please take Saxony and the alternative for Germany, AFD, with you. Why do you not go to another country? We are sick of you." Now, this is a Syrian immigrant telling this to the people that are native to Germany. to leave their own country. We are at risk, ladies and gentlemen, of having the same thing happen here. What you have going on right now is you have people being used as a weapon. Migrants being used as a weapon of war, and it is a war. Make no mistake about it. A German citizen immigrated to Germany, an open letter to the German government. He says, I believe that immigration is producing major and irreversible changes in German society. I am angry that this is happening without the direct approval of German citizens. A growing number of German people are abandoning neighborhoods in which they have lived all their lives, and others are leaving Germany for good as mass immigration transforms parts of the country beyond recognition. It's sad. But this is the thing, this is the model for the world, listeners. And it's addressed in Agenda 21. All countries, where appropriate, should develop and implement resettlement programs. I believe it's Chapter 7, if I remember correctly. Resettlement programs to address the specific problem of displaced populations in their respective countries. So, many things can make you displaced. The idea, this is what the United Nations has done for you and is doing for the people of the world. We also see from the Daily Caller, Hillary worried about jihadists entering with refugees in private speech. In a 2013 speech, Hillary Clinton worried about the risk of jihadists entering Jordan with legitimate refugees because they can't possibly vet all those refugees. Clinton today wants to increase the amount of Syrian refugees in the United States by 55,000 annually. Annually, every year, listeners. She believes that the U.S. refugee screening process is comprehensive enough to catch potential jihadists trying to enter the country through FBI director, though FBI director James Comey himself has said that the vetting process is severely limited by a lack of available data. Well, even if you vet them all, it still doesn't address the cultural problem. The cultural problem is a big deal, because if we're going to live and maintain the traditional lifestyle we've enjoyed in the West, and to have freedom of religion in whatever way, because many of these countries do not have freedom of religion. It's Islam or die. As a matter of fact, there is a church down in, I believe, Texas. I got the article here, Fox News. Police investigate Texas churches spray painted with "No to Wall, Islam or Die." Do you see? There's the problem. In the meantime, we have MS-13. Gangs coming into the country. There's an influx of youths crossing the border. 92% arrested were illegal. So we've got that going on from the Washington Examiner. KRGV reports a wave of immigrants taxing South Texas services. This is actually an Associated Press article. I won't read it in the interest of time because we're almost out of time. We have Mexican drug cartel members being arrested. New York City. Laundering money, making deposits at the banks. And Fox Business reports 800 to 1,000 immigrants are coming across the border every night, ladies and gentlemen, at the U.S.-Mexican border. Unbelievable amount of people going across the border. 800 to 1,000 a night. The Border Patrol is overwhelmed. What a frustrating thing it must be to be a Border Patrol agent. I guess I'll leave it there for now. Tell somebody about the broadcast. Pray for this republic. Do what you can to restore it. Thanks, everybody, for the phone calls. And thank you for listening. God bless you. And we'll talk to you next week. And we'll find out what happens in a few days with the so-called election. All right. I'm out of here. Have a good one. Bye-bye.